Welcome to Chacha Up, Shahaba City Library's YA podcast, where we read young adult books and then review them for you.
Before we start, let me issue a spoiler warning. We will be talking plot points, discussing characters in depth, and definitely spoiling the ending.
Do any characters die?
We'll be talking about them if they did.
So today it's just me and Luke, and we'll be reviewing After the Lights Go Out by Lily Wilkinson.
After the Lights Go Out was published in 2018, and the story is about Prudence Palmer, her sisters, twins, Grace and Blythe, and their doomsday prepper dad, Rick. It follows them and how they cope when a solar flare acts as an EMP and knocks out all technology that uses a microchip to function, which is basically everything.
What did you think of this book?
It kind of caught me by surprise a little bit.
Yeah.
When I first started reading, I had an idea of where I thought it was going to go.
Mm.
And then it sort of veered off into a completely different realm, and the story was very different to what I thought.
So what did you think it was going to be like?
I thought it was going to be more bloodthirsty and more desperate. Any post-apocalyptic book I read, I think Lord of the Flies. Yeah. I don't know why. I just think survival scenario, and I just think Lord of the Flies, and I'm just waiting for it to just kick off.
Do you think that, I mean, obviously it's written that way, but so it's by an Australian author and it's set in the outback in a town, well, outside and in a town called Jubilee.
Yes.
Do you think it could possibly have to do with the fact of where it's like set?
Possibly. I think the remoteness was something that is very important. Yeah. And I think within that, the writer places a big emphasis pretty early on the idea of community.
Yeah.
And I expected the community to collapse at some point.
Yes.
And then just to turn on each other. But that never really happened.
It comes really close. And a few people do, like, leave and they steal the pregnant lady's car, which was a low blow.
Well, that was the thing. The book it's not a long book. It's only around about 300 pages. And I kept thinking, oh, it's going to kick off in the next chapter. Yeah. Oh, they're all going to, you know, hell's going to break loose. But it never did.
Do you think, did that, did that take away from the story, or do you think?
No, because the way it went was I never found myself bored with what was.
I would agree with that.
I mean, the plot. I don't even know if there was really a plot. Like after the
not really
after the early adventures together to go and try and find Rick, Prue's father. They don't really do anything ever again, other than sort of hide in a paddock and
survive.
Then get found out very quickly.
Yeah,
which I found a little bit funny.
I mean. Yeah, the plot isn't really important in this book, I think is probably the way to explain it. It is more about the characters and, like, how they survive in the situation. So this book literally opens on mate Rick, him basically running his daughters through, like, a test.
Safety drill, essentially.
Where they have to leave their house, which is about 15 kilometres outside from the town. So they live on this massive, like all these acres.
Yeah, property.
Land, property, thank you. I'm like, the word's there. And they have to get to their bunker, which is what he has spent heaps of money building, like underground, calls the paddock.
Yeah.
And so I actually really liked that opening scene because there was a lot of tension and you're like, I was very confused for like the first few pages, like, because it mentions their dad and then like he's not with them when they're
when we get back to real time, yeah.
And I was just like, wait, what's happening? And then I slowly thought, oh, okay, maybe they're just like he's testing them. But I really liked how it explains how they have to like cross the creek and like he's all the things that Rick has like added. So he's putting like these sort of like stepping stones that won't like leave marks, so it won't leave a trail.
Ways to disguise where they've been, yeah.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. And then the description of like how they actually get into the paddock and then also the main character describes what the paddock is and, like, what's down there. And it's basically just, like, this massive house underground.
It is. It's like a Cold War storeroom, really.
Yeah. And I actually really like that because it really helps set the scene. And then it obviously sets up for this whole, well, this is what they're prepared for.
Yeah.
And he's like super paranoid because then obviously Rick arrives and he's like, you did well.
Yeah. He suddenly turns up. I thought it was interesting. The first chapter's very fast paced. You're going, oh my goodness, it's all happening.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like that fast pace ever came back to the novel again.
No.
Until perhaps the last
couple of chapters perhaps.
But it never really kicks off again.
I think that does work in the favor of the book though, because it's very fast paced basically up until, so like I said, there's a solar flare, obviously from the sun, that is big enough that it knocks out like all the electronics on the globe. But obviously they don't really know what has happened because they've been cut off. They don't know how fast spread it is or anything like that. So it's very like intense for that bit. And then traveling with our new friend Mateo to the mine, which is like 400 kilometers. So this town, Jubilee, is actually like where all the miners live.
Yeah.
So it's just a mining town, but they all get flown from the town to the mine, which is really far away. And so Prue decides we need to go find Dad. He's at the mine naturally. And they eventually get there. And then that's where she's like kind of scrambling to like find out if he was in the mine, because all the people in the mine are basically dead.
Yes, there's been an explosion in the mine after the power went out.
Yeah, and then obviously all the oxygen, all the filters and stuff stopped working. So basically everyone there is dead except for like 20 people, but he's not there. And I think that you're right, it does sort of slow down a lot more from that point.
Yeah.
Because then it's more of like, well, how do we react to this?
Yes.
And I think particularly because it is like a small town and there's a small group, it isn't so much like people trying to like get their own way with things. It's just like they're really confused and like lost.
Yeah, there's a big element of that.
And then slowly they sort of figure things out. And then, of course, it goes like really fast paced when Rick reappears months later.
Yes, that wasn't a surprise. I was waiting. He has such a small part in the novel at the start in terms of the time he's there. He's so important throughout.
He's a presence.
He's a presence every page. We're hearing the story from the perspective of Prue, the oldest daughter, and he's constantly in her head.
Because he's constantly in her head saying like family comes first.
Family is
first. You have to look after your sisters.
Good girl.
And it's like no matter what you do, you have to look after your family. And it's just like she's like, well, but I want to be helping these people, but what would Dad think? And, there's a very strong line throughout it all where she's like, I need to do what I'm told, but it's not what I want to be doing.
No. Should we talk about Rick?
I feel like we can start with Rick.
I think he was,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, early on, you know, you could see him as a little bit of a sympathetic character in a way that he's preparing and it's what he believes.
Yeah.
But he's just, I mean, the way he prepares his daughters for these survival scenarios.
I mean, it's intense because
it's almost abusive.
It is, because Prue talks about how she's allergic to peanuts.
Yes.
And he has trained her by either
surprise.
Well, being like, okay, I'm going to time you getting your EpiPen and like pretend stabbing yourself. But then she's like, oh yeah, and occasionally he just mixes peanuts in my food so I don't know, and stands there with the stopwatch to see how long it takes me to get my insulin into me. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that's child abuse. I mean, what I find him, because you're right, he does start out sort of sympathetic, because the whole thing is that the mother, his wife, left them because obviously he's a tough personality to deal with.
Yes, I think there would be some challenges in any marriage with him.
Yes, and then so the whole thing is that he kind of just takes them all off the face of the earth and like moves them to the middle of nowhere with no contact, no phones, no ID, no nothing.
No internet, no nothing.
And then just like gets seriously intense with the whole doomsday proper thing. But then you start finding out all these little things about him, like the whole dosing Prue to like teach her a lesson.
Yeah.
all the ways he sort of trained them, like he's taught them how to like navigate without a compass and find water and like all of these things, which are great.
Helpful, yes.
But like, it's how he's taught them that's the problem. And I don't know, I sort of see him, he sees his daughters as like assets, not people.
At the end, he very much sees them that way.
Yeah, because you kind of get that throughout the whole book, just the way, even the way Prue thinks about how he'd be reacting right now. So by the end, I mean, like there's literally a point in there where like one of the characters gets her period. And it's like literally in that whole bunker, there are no feminine hygiene products. dude has three daughters and he didn't think to pack some pads.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but like, really?
He hasn't consulted his team, has he?
Well, I mean, he's prepared them in so many ways, but then this is literally like a biological thing he has just ignored.
He's also ignored contraception as well. That was by choice.
He was literally like, if you're not having sex, you can't get pregnant. We'll be fine. And it was just like,
He's following the abstinence train of thought there.
It was, he's a complicated character.
Yes, and I think his return, there's obviously a real descent into madness when he returns. I mean, definitely.
I mean, his whole thing is, so when he comes back, he's like, well, where have you been? Because it's like 4 months later.
Yeah.
He finally returns to town and he's just like, well.
He tells them some crazy story that's not plausible in any way.
Yeah. And he's Prue
sees through that straight away.
Oh, yes. And he's also like, I should be the leader of this town. Like, you're using all of my things.
Her father is impressed that she would understand that straight away. But when he realizes that the paddock's been compromised.
Yeah.
And by this point, of course, Blythe has been killed.
Other one, Grace. Blythe killed Grace.
No, Grace killed Blythe.
No, it's not.
Grace is still alive.
It's the other way around. Grace was like the really preppy one and she's the one that got killed.
No, it's the other way around.
It's literally like...
Blythe is killed.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because Grace is jealous of her.
Is that what I wrote down?
Yeah.
So, yes. Okay, so I was wrong. It was... Blythe, who dies, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
So anyway, Rick comes back to town and, like, just doesn't care that she's dead because he's been watching them to see if they've all, like, gone crazy from government, like, experiments and stuff.
Oh.
He goes very paranoid right at the end. Like, I mean, like, extremely paranoid. Yeah. Like, thinking, like, planes have, like, chemtrails coming out at the end and, like... And because he tells Prue, like, why do you believe what's on the news? Like, because they get power back eventually by the end. Mm. So they kind of get, like, news stories. And he's like, well, don't believe them. It's the government. They're just telling you things. It's like, okay. Like,
yes, it's he really does descend.
It's not. It's totally not the government, okay? It was the sun.
It was the sun, and the government doesn't control the sun.
No.
As much as they'd like to,
Rick would probably think that they do.
Yes.
That was it. Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of his story is, he doesn't react to Blythe's death.
No.
And then he blames Prue for it because she's the one that's spilled the beans about the paddock and...
Yeah. Although before that, horrible friend Killer, like, followed them home and then, like, knew about it anyway. And it's like, it was a matter of time before all the other townsfolk found out about it.
Yes.
Because they were just coming into town every day to help with stuff and then going home.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, everyone else is, like, starting to starve, but...
And I think a big part of that from Prue's perspective was the guilt she felt.
Yeah.
People talking about not having a hot shower and, you know, she'd been in the shower an hour and a half before at home.
Rick, he's very obviously delusional because, like, just three teenage girls. Yes, they want to obviously have access to that stuff, but they're going to see their friends and stuff suffering. Like, I don't know. I think you're putting too much pressure on them to think. Like that, they could.
He's also tried to condition them to have no friends. He's cut off their social life. Any external influence on them, whether it be mobile phones, internet, anything, friends.
Yeah.
They have no close friends. He removes the only friend that we have in the book, who's actually quite important to Prue.
Yeah.
Never appears, is Anna.
Yeah. And she's away at boarding school.
Yeah. And then we hear from her at the end, although we never actually see her. But she's actually quite important.
She is, yeah.
She's the only contact that Prue has in the outside world that she trusts.
Well, I mean, most of the people that Prue, like teenagers that she has interactions with all have moved away to go to school. Well, like they come home occasionally. And she talks about having like short relationships with different people, boys and girls, which I actually like the inclusion of that because it's never actually like flashing neon lights. Oh, look, she's bisexual. It's just in there as like part of her character. But like none of them are there during this time.
No.
So it's not like she has that support system. But God,
and then Rick. I think perhaps one of his low points is the withholding the letters from their mother.
Yes.
Who is, the girls are obviously, as we read through the novel, they're not happy with their mother. They don't want anything to do with her.
Yeah, because she left.
She left them and then has never tried to contact them again.
Yeah, but then they go to the post office at one point because that's where they're staying, as you do. And they find a letter addressed to them from her.
Yes.
And then they kind of had that light bulb moment of like, okay, Dad's been keeping stuff from us.
Because that also makes Rick a more sympathetic figure in the book. He's a single parent. He's a single parent who the other parent has run out on. And he's by himself. He's just doing his best for his girls. Yeah. Yes, he's very paranoid. Mm. But as the story unfolds, we discover that it's not just paranoia. It's far beyond that. I mean,
and the whole thing is that once Prue makes it to the mine to see if he's there, there's, what's her name, Clarita?
Clarita, Mateo's mum.
She came in externally to do like a talk about health and safety sort of stuff. And so she's there and she's caring for like the injured people. And then no one knows where Rick is. And Prue leaves like this stack of stones up on a ridge. So like it's his sign, you know, like I'm here sort of thing. And he never responds to it. And she finds out that he did see it and he was there.
He was there the whole time.
That was when I think that's particularly where she starts to go, wow, I really don't trust you. Like she's had that all the way throughout the book of like kind of losing that faith in him. But then that moment, I think she's like, well, why did you stay away for so long?
And you can see it in the paper too. It's written. I mean, it goes from referring to her father as dad to Rick.
Yeah.
It just changes. Yeah. It's halfway down the page and it's now Rick.
Well, particularly because he's not there for all these really like intense and horrible moments, you know, once the power has gone out, because that's when like the town is obviously there. There's some looting, some light looting.
Yeah.
There's disagreements between, like, the people who own the beauty salon and, like, the corner store and stuff not sharing their supplies.
Yeah,
and there are people who do leave and they nick the car, that one car that works. And we do get to that point, like we were talking about before, where you're like, ooh, something really bad's going to happen. But then that little girl is playing hide and seek and gets trapped in the car and dies.
Yeah.
And I think that's that point where everyone in the town is just like,
for better or for worse, they're in it together.
We're in this thing. We need to like actually plan stuff.
That was what surprised me about the story too. Like what I said earlier. That's where I thought there was a few tipping points. You think, oh, here it is. Here we go.
There were some surprising moments.
And so it gets reeled in, and that's why I think community is a big part of
community
as opposed to family. I mean, they can be the same thing.
Yeah.
But Rick places a high premium on blood family.
Yeah. Yeah. And because the twins are very much, we need to follow his orders. But I think
Grace is very much. Yeah. She's his loyal.
But Blythe like follows as well. She's the one that follows his sister.
Yeah.
And I think too, because Prue says like we moved here 3 years ago, she's 17. So she remembers her life before probably more than the twins because they're 15. So they were younger. They don't have probably as much attachment to the outside world.
No.
And other people. But yeah, you know what? I think we should probably talk about Prue as a person. any thoughts?
Prue as a person?
Yeah.
I have to be honest, I didn't love her that much.
Yeah.
I thought she was obviously very handy, like well-skilled. Yeah. That was another problem I had with her, not so much her as herself, but conveniently we now have a main character who has all the answers.
Yeah.
And then we have...
At least there's a reason for it in this one, though.
It is. At least, yes, there is a reason.
Her dad taught her to pick locks, okay?
But then when there's some physical things she can't do, whether it's engineering, suddenly the boy toy comes in and he can magically create radios. Yeah,
okay, I'll be honest. I found her believable in that sense. Yeah. But Mateo, knowing all that science stuff and, like, knowing, like, how to, like, hotwire things and put solar panels together, I was just like, yeah. But back to Prue. I wouldn't really say I liked her, but I found her interesting.
Yeah, I did too.
Because, like we've said, she has all this internal turmoil about how she's acting in the situation and, like, if she's going against her family. And obviously all these skills that she's been forced to learn, like the picking of the locks and being able to navigate without a compass 8 different ways, not getting lost in the bush and, like, you know, knowing how to get water from, like, dew and stuff. Like, she's interesting, but, yeah, I'm not sure if I like her.
No, I suppose she's a product of her upbringing. I mean, we can't be expected. Yeah. She's
a realistic character.
She's not going to be a vivacious, fun, you know, with a big sense of humour.
Because she's the eldest child and she's the one that's been given that responsibility of looking after her younger sisters.
Yeah.
Because Grace, like we said before, she's very bubbly and, like, the centre of attention. But Grace was the one like that.
No, Blythe is the one that's really bubbly.
No, it's not, because literally Blythe says nobody can compete with Grace. I wrote that quote down.
It's the other way around.
Page 137.
Yeah, I know, because I got the same quote.
Literally?
It's the other way
Why
around.
Why would I write that? Did we read the same book?
Yeah, it's the other way around. 136.
No, it's not.
Nobody can compete with Blythe.
Why the hell did I write that down then?
You must have got the wrong...
Oh, my God.
Blythe is the really...
Why did I write that down?
She's the one that's
then?
With Keller early on, and then it switches. You remember, so then they switch at the end. Yeah,
maybe that's what confused me.
Because it's Grace that's been sleeping with her the whole time, him the whole time.
Yes.
That's where the trick comes at the end. So it's the second twin that does the killing and then is with the guy.
But, like, seriously, I literally wrote it from the book and I wrote it the wrong way. Okay, they are very confusing characters.
You said that for me before and I was like, no, that's not right.
Anyway, okay, so you talk about the twins, I'm done.
Where were we up to? What were we discussing?
The twins are like, they're sort of polar opposites, and yet they're also sort of the same person.
Well, they are kind of. Blythe is the more outgoing one. She obviously has the relationship with Keller.
Who is a smarmy asshole.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's written as the villain, I suppose, if there is a villain in the book. He's kind of a pathetic villain, really, though. You don't ever feel like...
Well, the whole thing is he's, like, using the twins to, like, get what he wants.
He's got to survive, though.
Yeah, but, like...
Prue has a really negative view on him.
Well, I mean, he's, like, this really creepy 19-year-old who's, like, leering at and then having sex with the 15-year-old sisters. So he's older than Prue as well.
He is a few years
So I can
older.
Understand that.
But his death is a little bit... He does get the rough end of the stick at the end.
To be fair, he was the one smacking the wasp nest.
He was.
So, I mean, dude's stupid enough to do that. He deserves to be stung to
He
like
does deserve
death.
To be stung. But Prue had the ability to save him. And
Yeah.
And I didn't
but
feel
so
like...
so did Mateo.
Was, so did he. But
and they both just stand there watching him with, like, EpiPens in his
hand. I know. They don't do anything. And then one of the issues I had with that was, you know, people die, whatever. But there's no consequence to that I felt. In that
no,
moment.
No, because they don't tell anyone as well.
Rick
they
comes back straight
dead.
Away, I think. Straight after that.
Yeah, no, he does.
And off we go. Oh, Keller's dead. He's been stung to death by bees. Everyone's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Moving on. I feel like if there's a sequel to this novel, maybe there'll be some kind of repercussions, but...
I don't think there's going to be a sequel.
No.
Okay, now all of my notes about those two are the wrong way around. So.
What about Mateo?
Hang on, we're still talking about twins.
You want to talk about the twins? Okay.
Can you just talk about how... What's the name changed when the other one died?
Oh, she becomes Grace. Grace becomes very introverted and very, very insecure after
Maybe
her sister dies.
Maybe that's why I thought it was the other one, because I thought it was...
You thought Grace died, but Blythe died.
No, but now I'm thinking, like, when I was reading it, is that what I thought, or is it just when I was writing the notes up? To be fair, dear listeners, I've read, like, 4 books in, like, the last week. So it's...
Yeah.
I feel like the fact that I have any of this straightforward is
You've got the
good.
Story, right? You've just got the names around the wrong way. That's the only
They're
thing.
They were twins and they were very much interchangeable. I'm sorry. Keller had sex with both of them. Well, no, actually. No,
only one. We think.
But, like, he was in a relationship with the other one.
Yes.
So,
and
anyway.
Prue catches them early on and she's very angry at Blythe, but Blythe is unaware of what she's angry about. And now we... It's not until the final third of the book that we discover.
But anyway, so Grace, which is the one that dies, right?
No.
I'm so confused because I feel like at one point in my notes I swapped the names. So I've probably written the notes.
Blythe.
Right, at one point.
Do you want to write it down?
Okay, I don't have a pen. It's okay. It's fine. I'm fine.
You sure?
Everything is fine. Anyway, she sinks into depression, doesn't wash her hair and stuff. I thought the characterization of that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, her twin sister, she shot her twin sister.
Accidentally, though.
Yeah, but, like, it's still a bit haunt you and, like, you know.
And part of that, too, is it doesn't explain for quite a few pages that she's dead. When she gets shot,
I mean,
the chapter ends and then there's no real confirmation.
I'm sorry, but that scene was pretty solid that she was dead. She drains of colour and, like, there's no... They don't have any, like, modern medicine, really.
No,
so there's no way she was surviving.
My belief was she probably was dead, but there was no confirmation for quite a while. And I was thinking, oh, is she going to, you know, come around a corner and there she is. You
I
know,
mean,
sitting,
isn't it, like, literally the next page, like, the funeral?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty soon after.
No, because that's what was one of the things that I sort of flagged my interest was like, oh, okay, maybe, you know, she's dead or not.
Whoever they are, I found the twins to be a bit stereotypical because there was one that was like really outgoing and one that was really quiet and just, yeah, they, I'm sorry, but obviously they merged into being one person to
me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So I am so confused.
That's true. And yeah. They're also not in the novel for large parts. They disappear for quite large segments of time and they reappear.
I mean, we're focusing on Prue, really.
Yeah.
So maybe she thinks of them as one person. That's why I'm so confused.
Possibly.
Yeah, we'll put the blame on her.
Should we talk about Mateo?
Yes, let's move on.
Okay, Mateo. So he appears in the book pretty early on.
Yeah.
He's Clarita's son. So Clarita's come from the United States to conduct a health and safety tour.
Via Puerto Rico. They're from Puerto Rico originally.
Yes.
Then via New Jersey.
New Jersey, yes, that's true. And they come here and they're doing Clarita's doing a health and safety talk at the mine.
You mentioned earlier.
Yes, and Mateo's staying in town. But of course, when the EMP occurs, he's isolated from his mother.
Yes.
And he begins a sort of a very interesting relationship with Prue very early on. They're very
situational.
Yes. And they headbutt quite a lot.
Yeah.
He is, early on, he comes across as extremely arrogant.
Yes. Particularly, there's a part where he talks about all the things that annoy him.
Yes.
And, and it's like, this list.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
That was so annoying.
Oh, you just want to hit him over the head with something, don't you?
Yeah. But I found, particularly because he's got two mums, he has rainbow-coloured hair, and he's, like, obviously not white, like pretty much everybody else in the town. He's that sort of, I don't know, diversity, yes, but, like, he's so different from everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, he's from a city, and, like, obviously
different
his
country,
life experience
yeah.
is completely different. He's from a different country. So he kind of brought in that, he's almost like the reader, I suppose, from that perspective, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
he knows as much of the environment and the community as we do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And particularly when very soon after he and Prue meet, that's when they find Anna's dad's old Holden and they take it towards the mine. They don't make it all the way because they're running out of petrol. But that's when, like, they get out of the car and Prue's like, well, yeah, I know where we're going, like, because she can navigate eight ways without...
And that's an interesting point because he's surprised and he's under the impression that all Australian women can do this.
Yeah, because she's not telling him that her dad's a proper.
Which at this point is understandable. She's only just met the guy. But as their relationship grows, she doesn't really open up to him about that.
No, but at the same time, like, they know each other for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's when she actually tells him about the paddock because she starts to trust him. And it's like, I don't know, their relationship just, it's very situational and like they put a lot of expectations on each other. Which, obviously, they're in a tough situation, so I know that they want to have that emotional support, which we talked a little bit about before, how there's really nobody there, for particularly Prue, and obviously Mateo is all alone until they get to the mine and actually bring Clarita back. So I think they do sort of cling to each other.
They're together
in
out
that
of necessity,
way.
Really.
Yeah. But they don't really seem right for each other in any other way.
No, there's no...
No. It's sort of shallow. Like, their relationship is pretty shallow. It's just, it's more of, like, propping each other up. Except then, like, Mateo, like, gets really angry at her because she's been keeping the secret.
He's been staying in a stinky hotel room with no air conditioning in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
So he's not very happy.
But, like, he instantly tells all, like, the town people, so.
Do you blame him for that?
No, because I'd probably do that too in his situation.
Yeah. I mean, his mum is requiring medical supplies.
Yeah, so she used to be a nurse, so she's, like, the only, like, medically trained person in town because the doctor was away.
Mm.
All the people in that surgery are not there.
No, not there to help.
So, yeah, I mean, he brings an interesting perspective to the world of Jubilee.
He softens out as the novel goes along, I felt, like, as a person. But
I think he accepts the situation.
Yeah, but he becomes less interesting to read.
Yeah, I mean.
I like people who are, you know, not very nice and a bit arrogant and a bit cocky. They're interesting to read. And as he gets becomes a nicer person and closer to Prue, he becomes less interesting to read. That was how I felt anyway.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think too, like we were saying before, I didn't believe that he knew all of those scientific and like engineering things. He's not that old and like, I don't know, it was some advanced stuff.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
It didn't seem very believable.
No.
Probably the most believable thing about any of his external knowledge was, like, him trying to do CPR on that elderly man with the pacemaker that stopped working.
Yeah.
Because, like, that I understand. Like, I did CPR course in high school a couple of times.
Yeah, so did I
don't know if I'd remember any of it if that happened in front of me. But, like, his mum used to be a nurse.
Oh, so. If I had to do it, you'd have to have the morgue on speed dial. I mean, it's not going to go well. I'm sorry.
But anyway, I think that was probably the most believable part. Not that I'm saying that, like, people of that age. So he was, like, 18 or something, I think.
Yeah, he's about the same, 18. Yeah.
I'm not saying that they can't know those things, obviously. Mm. It just didn't seem quite believable that he did.
And all the specifics of it, too. It's not just a case of, you know, jump-starting a car or something.
He makes a radio at one point out of just, like, some wire.
Yeah. And manages to drag in a signal that they believe is from Indonesia.
Yeah.
That's pretty advanced stuff.
That was probably the bit that seemed most,
I mean, it helps to light our way as to what's happening in the novel at that time, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of a, you know, jumping the shark.
Yeah. I would like to take a moment to mention Panda.
Oh, Panda.
Their dog. Oh, my gosh. She was just the goodest girl.
And then she ran away.
Yeah. Well, when the twin shot the other twin.
Yes. Not a good night for the Palmer family, was it?
The dog ran away from the noise, which I totally get. But then they find her again. She just ran home.
Yeah.
And they never check. Why would you not go check?
This family.
And then, of course, Rick nearly shoots her. Like, calm down, dude.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that he bought her as, like, you know, to train her up to do all these crazy things. And she's just like, no.
Nah.
She's just a ball of fluff.
Yeah.
She was just great. The goodest dog of all.
Now, Panda went with them at the end.
Yes. Yes. In the car.
So she made their...
When they left for Melbourne.
Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah.
Which... Again, I mean, we talk about the expanse of Australia, how big it is.
Yeah.
This is set in the northern part of Australia. It's implied it's in Queensland. Like, Melbourne's a long way.
A very long way.
A long way.
Yeah.
In an old car.
I mean, do they get there?
That's why when I was reading that, I was like, oh, kind of made me think that there was a possibility of, you know, of a sequel because her dad's still alive. Locked underground for many years, but
that was so nice.
Yeah,
sorry, but him trying to lock all of them in the he just like reveals that there's a separate room that you didn't know about in the bunker full of stuff, and then he's like, and yes, this is the like lockdown switch.
That makes a contradiction of everything he's argued though about trust your family, family's everything.
Yeah,
and then doesn't tell them he has this secret.
Like, extra storeroom. Like, actually,
and
I don't trust you.
And plan that can seal the doors.
Yeah.
That,
see, that's another reason why I think he looks at his daughters as assets, not people. Because, you know, he still doesn't trust them.
Does he see them possibly as, like, a repopulation tool? I know that's kind of creepy in a way because the only male in this scenario is him.
That's, okay, let's not get into that, please.
Let's not go down that road, but... I don't know.
Yes. Anyway, he does end up getting locked in there without the girls, so the girls get out, and so does the dog, thank goodness.
Yes. That was a good moment.
And Keller's dead, so they're all free to leave without attachments.
Yeah. Very conveniently for them.
Yes. What I did really like was the writing's really good, and I really liked the descriptions of, like, all the settings.
Yep.
Because they... I honestly felt like I was dying of the heat while I was reading this. Just like sweltering away in the desert. And it's also visceral and just like everything seems so real, even though I've never been in that sort of situation or that place.
It wasn't confusing too. The town was set out in a way that you understood where everything was and how they were moving around.
And like the scale of everything as well. Yeah. So the size of the town, but also the distance between the town and their house, which is, like I said before, like 15 km. Like it's a pretty decent distance.
Yeah.
And obviously driving to the mine. Like it all felt like to scale. And then particularly when they finally get like the cell signal and they get the messages and stuff, you suddenly, it sort of like all expands.
Yes.
And then you think, oh, okay, so this is actually still, it is happening everywhere else.
Yeah.
But some places are finally getting some power back and it kind of makes me wonder, well, what did happen in all of those
other towns, other places,
other countries.
Would it have been better to be where they have been?
Yeah.
Like sort of secluded away from the carnage and chaos of a city.
Yeah, because there's particularly, Prue talks about how they live in an area where they've always had to like ship in all the food and stuff because it's a desert.
Yeah.
But they finally get some rain and so they plant some stuff along like the creek. And it's like, well, what would have happened if they couldn't have left like when they did?
Yeah.
Because would those plants have kept thriving? Is it no water? Like,
no.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, just how, like, they do finally say, okay, we need to, like, figure out what we're doing, and they start, you know, they get the solar panels and stuff from the paddock, and they put it in different places, and they actually get this, they get their shit together, and, like, but it's to a point. So, like, they do that so that
Georgie.
So Georgie's a mechanic. Yes. So she's been, like, taking out parts from, like, fried cars and...
Bit of an unsung hero, really.
She was awesome.
Needs more screen... Quite a few of the townsfolk, actually.
Yeah, particularly considering her husband died in the mine collapse. Yeah. And she's got a young son and she's pregnant.
And these town townspeople I found really positive characters, because they never sort of descend into sort of the...
Yeah. I mean, they get, like I said before, they get really close. Like, the lady who owns the grocery... store or whatever.
There was an affair happening. And,
So some of those people do end up leaving though. So, but so she gets a few cars ready and then, like, gives them to the people and, like, they all kind of go in different directions. So that is kind of that moment where you're like, okay, maybe all of this organization and, like, particularly planting all the food and stuff was leading to them to, like, survive up until this point.
Yes.
And get back to civilization.
Did you feel reading it that at any points you sort of were zoning out of it? Like, there were points where you were, like, sort of went up and down and, you know, you're sort of not really that interested in the story at a certain point, or was it all sort of not pretty...
Not really. Well, like I said, I read it pretty much all in one go.
Yeah.
There were bits that definitely slowed down.
Yeah.
But I think when they didn't go on for too long that it made me bored.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was just like, oh, it's fine. It'll stop soon. Like, just keep going.
And it wasn't something too, because it's not such a thick book. You don't get to, you know, you're not halfway through and going, oh my goodness, I've still got 300 pages left.
Yeah. For me, it was more of like, where is this going?
Yeah.
Like, where is the resolution of all of this? It did come in the whole confrontation with Rick.
Yeah.
So I'm glad there actually was kind of like a solid resolution.
Yeah.
Obviously, they kind of drive off into the sunset and you don't know what's going to become of them. But I think that's the whole, like, there's that underlying tone of, like, having hope for, like, the future and that things will get better again. Yeah, and I like that. It works.
Yeah, I think it did too. I was pretty, like I said at the start, like, it was different to what I thought it was going to be. But that ended up being quite a positive thing.
Mm. I mean, personally, basically everything in this book, way too realistic for my liking.
Again?
Yes. I read books to, like, escape.
Yeah.
And this is, like, just a lot of realism. In a good way, obviously, because it means it's written well. But I didn't necessarily enjoy reading it.
Yeah.
It wasn't an enjoyable experience. But, I mean, like, if you're into that sort of thing, it was really done very well.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed this one. I probably enjoyed it more than the last one I did. I thought it was a little more quick-paced and it was easier to read. And there was sort of there's no lulls in it for me.
Yeah.
It was also very level.
And, like, even going back to the writing, the way Lily Wilkinson, like, describes things, like, particularly there's a scene where Prue is, like, extracting a tooth from her father's mouth at the end. And, like, she is kind of, like, really close to face-to-face with him.
Yeah.
And you get this really, like, vivid description of his face. You feel like a dentist, and, like, don't you? He's sunburnt and, like, he's all grimy. And, like, it was just really, like, I can totally visualize that. And obviously not in a bad way. Like, it wasn't telling me, it was showing me.
Yeah. And she does him a solid and then he turns around and...
Yeah,
tries to lock him underground.
Yeah. And particularly considering Prue talks, like, all the way through about how she hates being underground and she feels, like, really oppressed by, like, all the weight above her.
I mean, you can imagine what that would be. And, like, getting claustrophobic from it.
Yeah, just no thank you. Awful. Particularly being stuck down there with your crazy father.
Oh, I know.
And I would like to point out he's not crazy because he's a prepper. He's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, if that floats your boat, sure. But, no, he just loses the plot altogether. All right, well, how about we talk about our favourites? You want to go with your favourite character?
Yes, favourite character was Blythe.
Yeah.
Even though she died.
Why?
Because she was just fun to read. She was fun to read. All her quotes are great, you know. She's sarcastic. She's full of fire. She's everything that her sister is not. I know that it's very cliche the way they balance each other
out. Particularly with their names as well.
It's very,
she is very.
Is that a very English
and then
style?
The other one is very graceful.
Oh, very well done.
Thank you.
Well done. So she
and
was my favourite.
Prudence is so full of prudence.
She was my favourite. And I didn't love any of the characters, but I thought she was by far my favourite to read. Mm. What about you?
Mine is Mateo or Pandor.
The dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
I loved Panda. She was such a good girl. But yeah, I think Mateo, because he was just probably more interesting than most of the other characters, even though he did get a bit annoying. And then, yeah. But I mean, like you said, like, I didn't really have a favorite character, which is why it was Mateo or Panda.
The ones who are best to read,
I think. If there's ever a good dog in a book,
You're on its team?
Yep, that's definitely. Cool. And she survives, so, you know, that's always better.
Do you have a favorite quote? I'm hoping it's not the same as mine.
No, mine is between Mateo and I'm assuming it's not the same. That's why I just said no. I do have a favorite quote. That made so much sense. So mine is from towards the beginning where Mateo and Prudence have met.
Yep.
And he says, "Can you cuddle a kangaroo?" And she says, "Not unless you want to get disemboweled." Which I feel like is something I would tell, like, a tourist.
That is something that, yeah. That's such like, a...
Not unless you want to rip your face off.
It's like a Steve Irwin
thing. About, like, kangaroos or koalas or anything, wombats. Yes.
All terrifying, yeah, yes. You? For me, it was the exchange between Mateo and Blythe in the dam.
Yeah.
And they're talking about how oppressive the heat is. And Blythe says, "It's hotter than two rats farting in a polyester sack." after she says, "It's hotter than Satan's ball sack." And the best quote that Mateo responds with, he says, "It's so hot, two hobbits just showed up looking for somewhere to dispose of a ring."
I enjoyed that. That one.
That was a good one.
That was
one,
a good reference. Your favourite moment?
Oh, Rick turning up. I think that was what the novel needed.
Yeah.
His return.
And he like stages it to be like all dramatic and...
Which is deliberate.
Driving up in his dingy car.
I think that to me is the moment, because it really, the novel was sort of like I was saying, it wasn't dipping off, but it needed somewhere to go.
Yeah.
And his timing was perfect, and for the last few chapters it sort of kicked off again.
It did. So mine was when Blythe gets killed by Grace. Not so much because I liked it, but shush. Just because I really liked how that whole scene was written. It was very tense. Like that whole scene was super tense.
It was.
And I don't think I actually believed that the author was going to go there and, like, it was actually going to happen, but she did. So someone actually died. Like, one of the main characters actually died.
Yeah, it's a beautifully written
pretty bloody chapter. Too. Yeah.
Really well-written chapter. Yeah. It sort of captures you in. I read it in about 2 minutes of speed reading through it kind of thing. So, that was a good moment too.
All right. Well, how about we give it a rating out of 5?
I'm going to give it 4 stars out of 5. Did I love it? No, but I thought it was a really good book. I thought it was really well written.
Yeah.
Didn't take me the way I expected it. That's a good thing.
Surprising.
The characters I didn't love personally, but some of them were good to read.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a long book. If the book had been 500 pages, maybe I might have been a bit more negative, but she really knew how to time her writing and get everything laid out.
I'm going to give it 3.5.
Yep.
Because, again, it was written really well. It was a good story. Wasn't quite my cup of tea. Yeah, and I would just say if you like that sort of, it's not really dystopian, but, like, end of the world happening.
Post-apocalyptic kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I would certainly recommend it. And I always like recommending Australian authors.
Yes, and it's an easy read too. It's not hard to read.
Those are our thoughts on After the Lights Go Out by Lily Wilkinson. It was fun, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us, dear listener.
We can't wait to talk to you next time when we chat you up.